Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Purva Vibhag, first division or eastern division, first wave, Samanya Bhakti, verse number 11. Actually, this is the beginning of the book, because before this is Mangalacharana. So this is actually the beginning. The book begins by defining what is bhakti. Anya Vilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karma Adhiravritam, Anukalyena Krishnanu, Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. What is Uttam Bhakti? Yesterday we were describing, just explaining the word Anushilanam, which means to act favorably. And there's two aspects of that, Pravritti and Nivritti. Just like we have Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg. The path of Pravritti means you accept things, you enjoy this world, material path, karma. And Nivritti means renunciation. To give up. Pravritti means accept, and Nivritti means to reject or give up. So in this Anushilanam, this cultivation or this practice, we cultivate with our mind, with our words, with our body. And there's things, there's positive cultivation, which is called Pravritti, which we said, and then there's negative cultivation, which is called Nivritti, things that we reject or don't do. We try not to offend the holy name, and we try not to make offenses in the deity worship. And we accept, so we don't do that, or we reject those actions, although sometimes we may do it. But we accept the actions of thinking of Krishna's pastimes. Remember what Prabhupada said, thinking of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, thinking of his speaking on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, speaking about him, his glories. This is kirtan. And then working with the body to engage, always planning how to serve the Lord. These are the points we discussed yesterday. So, and then we mentioned how this bhakti shakti, or this surup shakti of the Lord, which comes down from the devotees, actually mixes with the atma, and it gives us the desire to serve Krishna. Because unless we contact bhakti shakti, we never have the desire to serve Krishna. Is not within us. We were living so many thousands and thousands of lifetimes, and we never thought once, oh, I want to serve Krishna. Jiva Goswami explains that the inspiration, even the inspiration, the idea, oh, I would like to serve God or serve Krishna, that itself that itself is coming from God. It is not a product of our own minds. We never think, I want to serve. There's some people outside. We never have the thought, like we were going through our life very happily and very peacefully, engaging in various activities. We never had any idea, oh, I want to serve God, or specifically, I want to serve Krishna. But at some point, that idea came in our head. So how it came in our head, and it's very hard to trace out how it happened. And basically what Jiva Goswami is saying, that the inspiration or the desire to serve Krishna comes from Krishna himself. And that because, and how it comes that he sends a ray of bhakti into our heart. And when our heart is touched by bhakti, because bhakti means the desire to the service of Krishna or the desire to serve Krishna. So that desire to serve Krishna comes from the devotee. So that's what he's saying, that the surup shakti, somehow we meet a devotee, he preaches to us, we read a book, and a touch of bhakti comes through that, because the books are transcendental, the devotees are transcendental. When one takes initiation, then you can read in 11th canto, upon initiation the devotee becomes transcendental, his body becomes transcendental. There's no more, so then bhakti acts through him. That's why when the devotees are preaching or distributing Prabhupada's books, they say, Prabhupada, how can we preach, how can we do this? And he said, you're my instruments, I'm working through you. I'm doing the preaching through the books, or I'm speaking through you. So this is the way bhakti is like electricity. It's coming down, you know, it's coming down from the powerhouse through the wires, and it goes from place to place, house to house, and then you, from your house, you plug in some appliance, and then it goes to that, and then it goes from that charger, it goes to your tape recorder. It's going. The power is moving from place to place. And everyone who contacts that power, they get the effect, they get charged, or some action happens. So bhakti is like that, it's coming down. It's a Swarup Shakti of Krishna. It comes down through Parampara, comes down through the devotees. And when we contact that, then we think, oh, I want to serve Krishna. And the more we contact bhakti, the more desires we have to serve Krishna. Initially we have one desire, oh, maybe I should serve, maybe life is meant for more than serving the body, it's meant for serving God. This only happens when we contact bhakti. Otherwise, you see how many billions of people are in the world. They have no idea, no inspiration, no desire to even think about God, what to speak of serve. So it's not that it's, you can say, inherent or within the individual living entity to serve God. It has to be touched. It's almost like you have a machine that can do so much activity. It's has a ability, but unless it's touched, it won't. You have to turn on the motor. So when we're touched by bhakti, then we think, oh, I have to serve Krishna. So that we were discussing yesterday. So when Rupa Goswami is giving the definition, he says, anukalyena krishnanu, he says, anushilanam. We discussed yesterday, anu means following, and shilanam means cultivation, or activities, or actions. Then he says, krishna anushilanam, because uttam bhakti, because he could just say anushilanam, but he qualifies it by saying krishna, he uses the word krishna. So then, Jiva Goswami is saying that the word anu, Krishna anu shilanam, the word anu connects shilanam to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Of all the primary characteristics of uttam bhakti, the most essential one is that pure devotional service is meant for Krishna. Because nowadays, especially in India, the word bhakti is very common. Everything is bhakti. And they use this word devotion or the bhakti. And you see, if you go to Kumbh Mela, everyone has a kirtan party, everyone is talking about bhakti, the Advaitins are talking about bhakti. If you hear lectures or see their advertisements, they say, seminar in bhakti, Swami so-and-so Anand and Rishikesh. They have seminar, and it's like, wait a minute, they're Advaitins, they're Mayavadis, and they're having seminars on bhakti. It's a very, very common word. And it's, completely Mayavadi preachers and sannyasis, they're talking about, oh, we should do some bhakti, it's very good for our meditation. So what happens is the common person, especially in India, they don't have any idea what really is bhakti. They say, oh, sometimes they use a term, I'm a Shiva Bhakta, I'm a this bhakta, that bhakta. Oh, I'm a bhakti, I'm a devotee of Vivekananda. I'm a bhakta Vivekananda. The bhakti, so that he wants to make it clear, this is 500 years ago, that this cultivation, these actions, is Krishna anushilanam, that actually uttam bhakti, the topmost bhakti, the purest form of bhakti, pure devotional service, is only for Krishna. Because when you see the devotees of Krishna, because Krishna is the form of the Lord that manifests in Vrindavan, you see that they don't have any, there's nothing else in them but the pleasure of the Lord. And even if you go a little bit outside, you go a little bit away from Vrindavan, and you go to Mathura Mandala, because in the old days, often you'll read in Harivamsa Purana and other scriptures, they talk about Mathura Mandala. But originally Mathura Mandala went from Mathura, the district of Mathura Mandala went from Mathura all the way to Dwarka. So Dwarka and Mathura are basically, that Dwarka is Mathura Mandala, it's basically the same. So when you step out of Vrindavan, Brajagokul, and go to Mathura and to Dwarka, you'll see there's some difference in the bhakti of the queens of Dwarka, Rukmini, etc., and the residents of Mathura, when you compare the intensity of their bhakti to the bhakti of the Brijvasis, Yashoda, Sridham, Subal, Radharani, and the Gopis. And because their rati is mixed, their desire to serve Krishna is mixed with a little bit of desire to have pleasure themselves. So the type of love that the queens of Dwarka have is called samanjasa. Samanjasa rati, which is a technical term. It means that Rukmini, Satyabhama, Mitravinda, Kalindi, etc., the queens are serving Krishna in the most intimate, confidential way as his wives, conjugal relationship, Madhurya, Bhav, as his married wives. They have some tinge. Their bhakti is not uttam. It is not the topmost expression of devotion. So this is Krishna Anushilanam, but it's Dwarkadish Anushilanam. So Krishna, specifically the word Krishna refers to Krishna and Gokul. So that's why he's saying, he could say Vishnu Anushilanam, or Vasudeva Anushilanam, or he could say Dwarkanath Anushilanam. But there, that form of God and the devotees who serve him, there is some slight, you can't say it's materiality, but there's some slight spiritual desire to serve Krishna and receive a little pleasure from Krishna. But the gopis' love for Krishna is called samartha rati. Their bhava or rati, their love is artha. The complete object or goal of their love is only Krishna and Krishna's happiness. And they never think anything about their own happiness. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining, Shikshastakam. Ashlishyava Paramatam. You can crush me, you can break me, you can leave me, you can step on me, you can never speak to me. It doesn't matter. Still, I'll keep serving you. I'll never stop. So this is why he's using the word Krishna to specify that Uttam Bhakti, this is where you will find Uttam Bhakti, in Krishna Bhaktas, the Brij Vasis. So he's giving the indication here that this book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, will ultimately explain the pure love, the pure devotional service of the residents of Vrindavan. And in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he describes Vatsalya Rati and Madhurya Rati and Sakya Rati. But then he concludes, of all these three forms of love in Vrindavan, Madhurya Rati of the gopis is topmost. And then, but he explains, because these are the three basic forms of love expressed in Vrindavan, and they're all for Krishna. Krishna is my son, or Krishna is my friend, or Krishna is my lover. Then his intention is to actually show the love of the gopis, so then he goes on to write a whole other book, which is a sequel to Nectar Devotion, Ujjvala Nilamani. So he's saying that this pure devotional service is for Krishna and no one else. The subject or vishaya of bhakti is Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Krishna Anushilanam means that it can also include other forms of God, Brajendra Nandan, Krishna and Braj, or Krishna and Mathura, or Krishna and Dwarka, as well as Narayan and Vaikuntha, the Das avatars, and other Vishnu expansions. The word Krishna is also explained, because he's telling you, he goes like this, you can include all these forms of Vishnu or Krishna, because they're all Vishnu Tattva. It also includes his plenary parts, such as Baladev, Chaturvyuha, and the differentiated parts and parcels, which means the living entities. Right? He's saying how far you can go with it. And the different energies, material and spiritual worlds. In other words, the general meaning of Krishna is that everything. Because Krishna says, what does Krishna say in Gita, 10th chapter? Ham sarvasya prabhava, mata sarvam pravartate, iti matva vajantimam buddha bhava samanvita. He says that I am the source of everything. And who's that aham? Who's speaking? Krishna's speaking. So Krishna Anushilana means that cultivation for Krishna. Well, Krishna, he's everything. That means acting favorably and engaging my mind and my senses, my body, and actions for Krishna and for Balaram and for Vishnu and for everyone, even the living entities. So this is the general meaning, that Krishna means everything and includes everything. But, as Jiva Goswami explains, because if you just look at the verse, you say, well, Krishna Anushilanam, because Anushilanam means cultivation or activities. It can be for any aspect of Krishna, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's avatars. Then Jiva Goswami says, because in Shastra, there's the written meaning, and then there's the explicit meaning and the implied meaning. Implied meaning is there some deeper meaning? That's why if we read Shastra without guru or without commentary, then we get confused. We may get misled. So therefore, commentaries are required. So Jiva Goswami said, we have to understand what is the intention of Rupa Goswami. That's what he's explaining. He said, the specific meaning intended by Rupa Goswami here is Krishna and his personal expansions, his pure devotees, his spiritual abode, and his paraphernalia. Krishna is the one and only subject of devotion, bhakti vishay, As a result of one-pointed love for Krishna, one loves everything directly connected with him. So he's specifically saying that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, he is the object of Uttam Bhakti, or the Vishay, the object of Uttam Bhakti. And if we love Krishna, as Prabhupada said so many times, if you love God, you love everything. So Krishna, if we love Krishna, then we'll love and serve everyone. So Krishnano Shilanam, because this is part of the primary definition of pure bhakti, Uttam Bhakti, pure devotion, is activities of offering loving service to Krishna directly and to persons related to Krishna. So Anushilana means activities performed for the pleasure of Krishna with the body, mind, and speech. So this is what our goal is. We're trying to attain Uttam Bhakti and understand what it is. So it's a full demand. Uttam Bhakti demands everything. Wholesale surrender. Wholesale takeover. Sridhar Maharaj used to say that bhakti comes into our heart like a general, like a conquering general, conquering another country, and takes over the heart, or at least wants to take over the heart. But we resist. So if someone is attacking, if you're a king and have a kingdom, and someone is attacking your kingdom, then you'll resist. You'll fight back because you're attached. You don't want to lose your kingdom. So when bhakti comes in our heart like a commander and is attacking, not, you can say attacking us, but it wants wholesale takeover, completely takeover, take over the government, take over the communication system, take over the entertainment system, take over everything that's in that kingdom, which is us, our senses, mind, intelligence, heart, all of our thinking, feeling, willing. This is the total, absolute takeover. He says wholesale. So he says bhakti wants, and so in order to, either you can fight bhakti or you can surrender. So he said the wholesale surrender. This is what is meaning of Uttam Bhakti. So now it says, anukulyena krishnano shilanam bhaktir uttama. So Jiva Goswami explains, what is anukulya? We must have heard descriptions of sharanagati or surrender. It says, anukulyena sankalpa pratikulyena varjita. So he says that anukulyena means to accept those things. I think everyone's heard this. We should accept those things that are favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject those things that are unfavorable. The same word is here, anukulyena. Means following, and means favorable intention, friendly attitude. So anushilanam, this is talking about actions, or the working or dealings or expressions of our words, our bodies, or even our thinking. But then to make it even more, because that kind of we're talking anushilanam is like the activities of the mind and senses, the mind and body. But as we mentioned yesterday, what about the heart? Is your heart into it? Your body maybe is into it. And it's like we chant Hare Krishna. And our mind is somewhat into it, because if it wasn't into it, we couldn't chant. So the mind is putting some mental energy, some nervous energy into the functions, the hand and the mouth and the tongue. Otherwise, they wouldn't move. There's some attention there of the mind. And we're chanting, and we're also hearing. But is our heart into it? Is our heart into the chanting? Because we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, but our heart is going somewhere else. Our heart is going to some other object of attachment or some other person. Because our heart is not attached to Nam Prabhu. We may be attached to another Prabhu or another Prabhu genie. Another, you know, some Prabhu is attached to some Mataji or whatever, some lady. So Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. But the heart, that's why in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya, he's telling that there's two witches that live inside, Pishachi. Two Pishachi that live inside the heart. One is known as the witch of material enjoyment, which is karma. And the other is the witch of renunciation, or tyag. And that is known as gyan. These are like two witches, and witches they destroy someone's thinking power. And they sometimes suck the blood of these vampires or vampiress, or whatever they may call them. they extract your life energy, your essence. So they're right there with us. He said, Bhukti Mukti Pishachi. You know that Spriya? Bhukti Mukti Pishachi Spriya. He says that they're manifest in the heart. This desire for enjoyment, to enjoy. We just want to enjoy. Right? So now this is a very, very complete definition, most complete and perfect definition of what is Uttam Bhakti. And a few words he's giving. All right, my mind is into it, my mind is thinking, and I'm involved, I'm doing the service, I'm planning, I'm cooking, I'm making the feast, my body's working. But where's my heart? So he says, anukulyena, there must be a very favorable intention, friendly attitude, and favorable disposition. Anukulyena refers to behavior or acts of devotion which are pleasing to Krishna. So now he gives some examples in the purport. It's here, and it's all here. I've just kind of summarized it in my notes. When Kamsa's wrestlers in Mathura, you remember when Krishna and Balaram went to Mathura for the Dhanura Yajna, they were carried there by Akrura, and then the wrestling arena was set up with the intention of killing Krishna. So then Krishna is wrestling with Chanura Mushtika, and they struck Krishna's limbs, they were smashing him. It gave Krishna great happiness. He was tasting a rasa, one of the gona rasas, or secondary rasas, known as chivalry, heroism. If someone is a kshatriya or someone likes to fight, then if he gets in a good fight, it feels good, it feels happy, you know. If you're a sportsman or you're a sports athletic person, someone says, come on, let's play tennis or something, and you know, you get a taste of that competition, sport, playing with your friend. So this is called viraras. So Krishna is relishing, so he was getting happiness. So one of our definitions in the definition is that bhakti should be done for the happiness, actions for the pleasure of Krishna. That's what anukulyena, anushilana means, the cultivation of acts which give pleasure to Krishna with our body, minds, and words. That's anushilana. But so we say, oh, Krishna was enjoying, he was having this fight, he was relishing. But was that considered uttam bhakti? So although externally the striking of the Lord was pleasing to Krishna, it is not accepted as bhakti because the attitude of the heart. Because why were they fighting Krishna? Although Krishna was deriving pleasure from it, what was their intention? What did they want to do, these fighters? They wanted to kill them. Maybe make more fan go around because it's pretty stuffy in here. Number four, three or four or something. It's too slow. Maybe you can open the door and that window. I get some breeze. I think it's not hot out yet. So what was their attitude? Their attitude was, well, he may be getting happiness from our fighting, but we want to kill him. So this is not a good attitude for a devotee. So we also may have some attitude like that. We're in the temple, and the temple commander says, please do this service. So we're doing a service, but our attitude is, oh, I want to kill the temple commander. I don't know if it goes that far, but you know, why is he picking on me? If he wasn't so much bigger than me, I would just say no and hit him or something. So that attitude, then though we're doing some service in the temple, and our body's engaged and our mind is somewhat applied to our activities, otherwise we can't function. So body and mind are engaged in anushilanam, but is it anukulya? Is it actually, or do we have a favorable attitude? We're happily doing it with a friendly attitude? Or are we like the Kamsa's wrestlers? Okay, Krishna, maybe you're getting happiness that I'm sleeping in the temple, but I probably don't like what my attitude is, because if I get a chance, I'm going to knock off this temple commander. So this is an interesting point. So the wrestlers' acts were done maliciously with the intention to kill Krishna. Therefore, their activities are completely opposed to bhakti. Now this is another classic example that is used, Mother Yashoda. And you often hear in other places when this point is described. Mother Yashoda was breastfeeding Gopal. You just imagine, Krishna woke up, it's early in the morning, And she was busy doing what all mothers do in Braj Mandal early in the morning, is they churn yogurt to make butter. Because when the children get up and the men get up and everyone gets up, the first thing they want to have is some dalia or some roti, and then you have to have so much butter inside. You know, and those rotis have to have a lot of butter. And so they churn the yogurt and they make butter. So they don't have a refrigerator. And they don't go to the local store and buy a kilo of butter. They make it fresh every day. Taza makan. Makan and mystery, right? Krishna like makan and mystery. Even it's told in Govindalilamrita, when Krishna wakes up, sometimes he's very, very, very tired. You can imagine if you were dancing all night on the banks of the Yamuna and spinning around like a firebrand. And there was one Krishna, and you were dancing so fast, it appeared that there was one Krishna between each gopi. This is what Vishwanath explains. He said, how can we, Vishwanath, accept the idea that there was one Krishna, one gopi, one Krishna, one gopi? Because this is too much Aishvarya. And then this disrupts the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. There was only one Krishna and with one gopi. But he was dancing so fast that each gopi didn't realize when he left one gopi and went to embrace and dance with another gopi, she was still absorbed and relishing and just didn't even know he was gone for that 1 second. And then he was back again within 1 second, again embracing her and dancing with her. So in this way, we keep the sweetness, because sweetness means human-like. The Nara-lila, it's called Nara-lila, it has the topmost sweetness because it's human-like. As soon as you start sprouting forearms and mystic powers and walking on water and then all that, those kind of things, and it's like it brings in awe and reverence and separation and us and them. It's not, oh, he's just like us, he's a human, I'm a human. So he said, Vishwanath's contention is that there was only one Krishna in the rasa dance. He was dancing so fast. It's kind of like if you're wearing a rose garland, and they're very, like Vrindavan rose is very fragrant, then you take it, someone says, oh, let me wear it, and they take it, and they go away. But then, if I'm sitting here, I can still smell the roses. I can smell just the aroma is still lingering in the air, although the garland's not there. So that's like the rasa dance. Krishna was dancing with one gopi, and then he left to dance with another gopi, but she was so absorbed in the aroma and the fragrance of his bhav, or the fragrance of his love, that she felt, oh, he's still here. Just like if you smell, oh, the rose garland is still here. I still smell it. But if you look, oh, it's gone. But because you're so absorbed in the aroma and the fragrance, your awareness that it's not there is not, you don't have that awareness because your attention is absorbed in the scent. So when the gopis, when Krishna left one gopi to dance with another gopi at lightning speed, the one gopi is so much absorbed in relishing Krishna's presence that she didn't realize that he wasn't there. Because she was just still relishing the ecstasy of the previous moment, which was still lingering into the next moment. And then before she could realize that Krishna wasn't there, he was back. You know, when the lingering went down, when that feeling started to just go down a little bit, then, oh, you never left, you're always here. So this is called achintya. We cannot conceive with our brains, because if we're in a disco dancing with our boyfriend or girlfriend and they leave, then they're gone. we don't feel like they're with us, and we feel like they dumped us or whatever. So now let's look at Mother Yashoda. He wakes up and he's sometimes, as I said, he's very hungry and he can't even get out of bed because he's dancing all night. He's so fatigued and tired. And Mother Yashoda says, oh, Rohini, look, he's so tired. He wrestled so much with the boys yesterday. He's so tired. He didn't get enough rest. But now the sun is rising. He has his duties. He has to go milk the cows, and he has to eat and dress and bathe. And all his boys are starting to come, and friends are gathering outside. What to do? And then she said, I just churned. There's some fresh butter. You can give him that fresh butter. Mix it with some misri. So then she did, and then he gave him a little wake up, like a wake up drink. Sometimes they have this phrase, wake up drink, and get some tonic or something to wake up. Like that's what the karmis do. They have their cup of coffee every morning, right? First thing they do, they wake up and I don't know whatever they do. The first thing they do practically is drink their coffee or tea, because unless they do that, they can't do anything after that or other things. They're habituated to that. That stimulates everything else. So Krishna, he doesn't drink coffee. He takes makan and mystery. And when he takes kind of mystery, then that stimulates everything else. Then he starts. So what happened was, he was very hungry and she was churning. So then he cried, and then she picked him up and was feeding him. Let me imagine, now Krishna's on her breast. He's directly drinking her milk and he's hungry. And he's very hungry. It's early in the morning. He just woke up. And when children, when we're older, we don't maybe forget. When you're young, as soon as you wake up, you want to eat. Maybe when you're older also. I'm a little bit not so healthy, but I mean, maybe when you're healthy, when you wake up, you're hungry. But when I wake up, I'm still tired. I just keep pushing on and, you know, fall down again at night, that night. At any rate, so he was very hungry, so she's feeding him. And then, but at the same time, she was boiling some milk. Some fresh milk just came and she was boiling it. And so then, as she was feeding him, then she noticed, oh, this milk is boiling, is starting to bubble up, you know, when you cook, comes up the side of the pot. And if I don't go there and attend to that milk, so she practically just dropped Krishna, ran out to attend to the milk. So someone would say, oh, this is bhakti. I thought bhakti was giving pleasure to Krishna, making him happy. So what could give more happiness and pleasure to a baby than sucking on his mother's breast? But that's all he knows. That's his A to Z. I mean, that's his be all and end all. Because that's his sustenance. That's his, a baby, that's all he doesn't eat potato chips and Coca-Cola and stuff. I mean, and Mayapur cakes and stuff like this. I mean, you know, all he knows is this round thing, and then you just push on it, then he gets some squirts of milk, and it tastes good. And because mother's milk is sweet, just like in a cow. When you first milk a cow, and when the milk comes out for the first few seconds, it's very sweet. But when it stays in a bucket for like a minute or two, the sweetness goes. So that sweetness is meant for the calf, unless you're Krishna, because Krishna directly drinks sometimes from the cows. If you've ever milked cows and had fresh milk, I had the experience, it's like that. It's sweet for about 5-10 minutes. It's quite sweet, cow's milk. So what to speak of mother's milk. So he's having this nice sweet in the morning, and then also, she puts him down. So he describes, he says that Mother Yashoda is breastfeeding Gopal, she left him unsatisfied, and then to tend the boiling milk. Though Krishna, what did Krishna do? He was very, hey, what is this? I was hungry, and he got very angry. And then he broke the pot. She was churning, he was there and she was churning. She picked him up and was feeding him right where she was churning. He broke the pot of yogurt. So this doesn't look like a very good thing. Doesn't look like Uttam Bhakti. So he explains. Though Krishna was apparently displeased by Mother Yashoda's activity, her action is accepted as pure bhakti because it was done with a loving intention to please Krishna later. So she was pleasing Krishna, and so you can contrast this with the wrestlers. The wrestlers are beating Krishna up. But from Krishna's side, he was thinking, well, this is fun. I'm tasting Vira Ras and chivalry. But then we examine their mentality. Their mentality was, we're going to beat him to a pulp. We're going to kill him. So that their intention was unfavorable. Although Krishna was getting pleasure from it, their intention was unfavorable. So we can see here that the intention, the heart, is very, very important. It's even the outside activities. Because Mother Yashoda externally appeared to displease Krishna. But her intention was, it's anukulya, it's given as an example of favorable attitude or favorable friendly heart, because she was thinking, totally absorbed in the pleasure of Krishna, because my breast milk is giving Krishna pleasure, but I have to put him down for a second, and he can again get pleasure from my breast in 1 minute, because that milk on the stove is also for his pleasure. So then someone might say, well, what's the big deal if some milk spills over? Because they have 9 lakhs of cows. So just keep feeding Krishna for 5-10 minutes until he's full, and then you can go and let that milk boil off and burn off and whatever. But then Jiva Goswami says that, he says, Tadiyanam Samarchanam, as Krishna is worshipable, also the things related to Krishna are even more worshipable, like his devotees, his paraphernalia. So that stove and that fire and that butter and that pot and that milk is very valuable, and it's just as worshipable as Krishna. Pretty interesting point. And moreover, Mother Yashoda is thinking, He's having my breast milk now. And that milk, I'm about to prepare some very special sweets with that milk. So if it burns, and this is milk from the best cows. These are the Padmagat, you know, this whatever their name, I forget their names, but this is from some of the best cows in Nanda Maharaj's herd, where they have the sweetest, richest milk, with the most butter, fat, and the sweetest taste, and rich, thick milk. And what am I going to make with that milk? I'm going to make burfi, rasgullas, glove jamans, huh? Sandesh. Well, any other things we're not eating for Karti? Any other things we're fasting from? Kheer. So all these things. And can I make those things with my breast milk? Not possible. So my breast milk, I can only do one thing. So that milk is very important because I have to make all those things for Krishna. When he goes out in the pasture grounds, he has to have all these things to take with him for his lunch, for his tiffin. So she was thinking that this is very important. So her action is accepted as uttam bhakti because of her loving intention to please Krishna later with various sweetmeats which could not be made from her breast milk. There was no trace of hostile or unfavorable attitude in Mother Yashoda's heart. Mother Yashoda's mood was always in complete agreement towards Krishna. She was constantly attentive towards Krishna's welfare. If any activity circumstantially displeased Krishna, although it was not intended to do so, that activity is not considered to be not bhakti. Whereas activity which externally may displease Krishna externally, it can be accepted as pure devotional service if the intention is loving. Because she puts him down for 1 minute to keep that milk from boiling, and he cries, ah, and even breaks the pot. But then a minute later, she's back feeding him, and he's, oh, well, and he forgets. As children are like that. They cry in 1 second and then turn it off the next second. It reminds me of the dogs, because I haven't been around children for a long time in the family situation, but I'm reminded of children when I see the dogs in Radhakund, because what happens, they're so funny, these dogs. That if someone takes a stick, these Brijbasi, sometimes they crack the dogs with a stick or a stone. Then they hit the dog, and the dog goes, wow, 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 wow. And then he runs off the side and goes, wow, 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 wow. And then he does it for about 1 minute, then he goes back to sleep. and then what's even more funny about these Brijbasi dogs, because almost any dog in the world, if you throw a stone, they'll go, wow, or, you know, whatever. But these Brijbasi dogs, which will never happen anywhere else, if you go, you know, he's walking there, and you pick up the stone, you go like this, and they go, ow, 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 ow. you don't even throw the stone. You just pick it up, like, you know, hey, and then he goes, ow, ow, ow. Exactly the same tone of voice, the same tone, the same pitch, and the same kind of sounding like, oh, it hurts. And so you can understand that even when you throw a stone, that it really doesn't hurt, because it's the same pitch, and it lasts for 1 minute, and that lasts for 1 minute. If he gets hit or it doesn't get hit, he goes, ow, 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 ow. It's very funny. Brijbasi dogs are really, it's part of the whole drama. Because Leela means drama, so there's so much drama going. Everyone's playing in the drama. The monkeys are playing. Just like last night, there was I didn't see it, but my chokinar told me. Some Western people from Europe or whatever, they bought some big bus, like mobile home. You know, they have those mobile homes on wheels, they drive around here and there. Big long thing with bed and kitchen and all that. And they came to Radhakund and they parked down by the police station. And it's like a living bus type, house on wheels. And some kids, it's firecracker time. I mean, Navaratri is when people are throwing firecrackers. So somebody went under the thing and threw a firecracker. Boom! You know, Brijbasis. You know. And so these Europeans, you know, these Western folks, you know, they came out, hey, what's this? You know, you put that right by the gas tank. It could have blown up my house. And then they went in and they grabbed the kid. They took him to the police station. And they wanted to make a complaint. And then my chokinar told me the policemen were like, just like laughing like anything, because it's so ridiculous. So, but the Western people, he should be prosecuted. And it cost 12, 15 lakhs or whatever, you know, the mobile home cost. It was right by our gas tank. It could have blown up. And the policemen were like, okay, you know, sure, we'll prosecute him, you know, right? I mean, people like shoot somebody dead right in front of the police station. They don't even do anything about that. They have shootouts right in front of the police station. They don't even make a report. And, you know, what to speak of that. So this brudge, and because this is the drama. These guys came and they had some kind of funny attitude. So Radharani wanted to give them a little spark. So Radharani threw a little firecracker under their, you know, thing, and they got so uptight, you know. It makes some offense to the Vrijvasis, and that's probably the last time they'll ever come to Radhakund. So this, we have to, when we live here, we have to enter into the drama. Isn't it? That's, I mean, that's actually the goal of our sadhana anyway. Enter into the drama, right? It's called Lila Pravesh in technical terms. Pravesh means entrance. So we want to enter Lila Pravesh, which we can enter, not with a stool. It's interesting because in Sanskrit they talk about the subtle body and the gross body. So the Sanskrit for the subtle body is stool shrir or linga shrir.
The gross body is stool.
Gross. Yeah, so in Sanskrit this gross body is called stool shrir. S-T-H-U-L-A, stool shrir. And the mind and everything is called linga, like Shiva linga, linga shrir. So, of course, in English, stool means, you know, everyone knows what that is. So it's quite appropriate, stool shadir. So this deha cannot enter the lila. We can only enter the lila with siddha deha. So this is, we are trying to attain this so that we can enter the lila. Now we're participating in Krishna's drama in this body. We're members in the drama. And everybody gets a name, because usually players in the drama, they get a name. Duryodhana, Arjuna, Shakuni, Draupadi. Usually individuals have names. So when you live in Vrindavan for some time, then you get a name. People give you, they appoint a name to you, and then you play in the drama. So I remember when we stayed at Radhadamodar, they gave me the name Angrez Baba. The local people. So, and then as someone would go somewhere, they'd say, "Oh, I heard they call you Angrez Baba." So because you're playing in the drama, or they say, "Where, who's over there?" "Oh, that's Angrez Baba's house," or whatever. So now let's hear more about this Anukulyena. This is, first of all, if you just come, this is the most important verse. If you only want to learn one verse in your life. If you don't want to really crowd your brain with a lot of Sanskrit, you want to learn one verse, which is the basis. This verse is the basis of 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam, which expands on this verse. This verse is the basis of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It is the basis of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And it's the basis of practically all the books of the Goswamis. Learn this one verse, verse 11, chapter 1, verse 1, which we're discussing. Anya bilashita shunyam. Jnana karmadya anvritam, yad anvritam, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. Because it defines uttam bhakti. So anukulyena, this is the position of the heart, the attitude, the mind. Our mind, anukulyena, the word anukulyena means to be completely free from any attitude that is unfavorable or hostile or inimical to Krishna. So when you combine these words, Anukulyena Krishnanu Anushilanam. Anukulyena means favorable, and Krishna, of course, is our Lord of Vrindavan. And Anushilanam means cultivation or actions, which includes actions of the mind, positive, and actions of body, mind, and words, positive and also negative. We avoid some things and we accept and perform other activities. Like we have to act to avoid Namaparad. And we have to act to avoid sevaparad. These are also actions. So, the phrase anukulyena krishnanu shilanam means continuous service or emotion directed towards Krishna, his expansion forms and others related to him. This service always gives delight to Krishna if it is performed with a friendly attitude and favorable intention. This is the essential characteristic of uttam bhakti. There's some other note here also. This is further explanation. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. The cultivation of activities favorable or pleasing to Krishna. To act favorably for Krishna. Uttam Bhakti is all-inclusive. It includes all the activities of bhakti. In other words, whatever we do in bhakti, our attitude should be very favorable. Oftentimes we even have heard in English, if you know English, someone says, it's not what you do that counts, it's how you do it. It's not what you do, it's how you do it. In other words, what are you doing? I'm serving prasad. Well, how are you doing it? Are you doing it lovingly? Or as they say, with TLC, tender loving care? Or it's blop, 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 blop. You know, going down, I remember in Los Angeles when I used to serve oatmeal in the morning. That was their breakfast in 75, 74. And they gave a little piece of wax paper on the floor, not a leaf plate or any kind of plate. It looks like a piece of paper, but it had wax on it. And then some new bhakta would come down with this big scoop about this big. It would give about 1 kilo at a time. It was like a big bowl, so they wouldn't have to waste time. Efficiency program. And you're supposed to, hopefully you wanted to eat that much also. So he would come down and go, pop. He would hold the thing about 2 feet above your plate and drop it. So you would get oatmeal on your eyes and on your face and your dhoti and everything. He's like, plop, plop, plop. I was thinking, my God, what, does this guy have a brain? So his heart was some, I don't know where, if he had one, but where his heart was. His was not very much attentive. So he's saying that all the activities, whatever we do in bhakti, our heart must be into it. We must really put our heart into it. Because ultimately, the heart is where the soul is, and the soul is, this is what we want, is consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So it really doesn't even matter so much what you do, it's how you do it. Like, you may not know anything about Sanskrit, but at least you try to read the verses and understand, especially if your guru has ordered you to read the Sanskrit. The South Indian Brahmin, he was ordered by his guru to read the Sanskrit. He wasn't very expert at the Sanskrit, but he was trying, every day reading Gita. And but the thing with him was, his heart was so pure that his attitude, he said, I don't really know this very well, and it's very difficult for me. Just like we sing some astakams every morning. And they have these long meters, Malini meter and Vasant Tilaka, and all these interesting names, nice names, Vasant Tilaka and Malini. And they're very, and your tongue feels like it's just being tortured. Because we're not Brahmins by birth, so we don't have a natural tongue to pronounce Sanskrit. It's very difficult. So it's these long lines, da 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 da. It's like, by the time you've finished 8 shlokas, your tongue is ready to retire or leave your body or something. But your tongue is filing a petition for, you know, relocation. Or your tongue is saying, Dear Mr. Smith, Dear Mr. Swami, I want out. I want to go somewhere else. That's as our acharya Vargas often told us, the environment is favorable, the environment is positive. Everyone in the environment and everything that's happening in the environment is pushing us positively and progressively towards our goal, which is Krishna Prema. There are no enemies here. There is no opposition. The only enemy is our mind, and the only opposition is our desires. This is the situation. So, what were we just saying? So we're just reading this note here. So he says, Uttama Bhakti is all-inclusive and includes all activities of bhakti. In this verse, Rupa Goswami does not specify what those favorable actions are. So he's just saying anukulyena. He's not saying that your chanting should be anukulyena, or your reading should be anukulyena, or your serving of oatmeal should be anukulyena. Because favorable to Krishna also means favorable to the devotees. It's not like, because that's the kanishta. I love Krishna, but I can't stand you. I love Krishna, but you're my godbrother. I can't stand you. or my god sister. Well, Krishna's nice, but you. But it must be favorable for both. Love me, love my dog, they say in English. If you love me, then love my dog. So if you love Krishna, love his dog. The dog has a collar, right? We have our neck beads. So he's not saying what are those favorable activities are. So then Jiva Goswami is saying, this means that anything and everything can ultimately be uttam bhakti if our mind is in the right position. Practically anything and everything. Any activity, even cooking, cleaning, eating, sleeping, washing cloth, bathing, is bhakti. But it must be done Krishna Anushilanam, for the pleasure of Krishna. Then it is bhakti. Bhakti is 24 hours a day. It's not something you go on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to the gym, or you go to the yoga studio and you do 1 hour of asanas and a half hour of pranayama, and then you go home and business as usual. Bhakti is 24 hours, 24 ghanta kaam, right? 24 hours action or work. So it's not a part-time activity. So this is what he's saying, that when our consciousness, when we're thinking, why am I sleeping? My sleeping is also uttam bhakti. Ordinarily, sleeping is tamaguna, it's total ignorance. It's not, how is this favorable? How is this anukulya? How is this favorable to Krishna? Because I'm sleeping just enough so that I have sufficient energy to serve Krishna. My sleeping is also because it's required. I'm sleeping just enough so I have only not more or less than I need to have the energy that's required to please and serve Krishna the next day. And my bathing, why am I bathing? Am I bathing so I look beautiful? No, I'm bathing so my body is fresh and clean so I can serve Krishna. So if we're thinking, but if we're bathing, but when so that's anukulyena, that's favorable. Our bathing is also uttam bhakti. But when our bathing becomes enjoyment, then it's not favorable to Krishna. It's like when you turn on hot water and then you say, or whatever. You know, hot water is going down your back or this or that. And, you know, if you have, we don't have any here, but if you happen to have hot water around. And then, so then, is this favorable to Krishna? You're chanting of these ooh mantras and ah mantras. These mantras are not listed as some of the, you know, the bija mantras or the Gayatri mantras that we're chanting for the pleasure of Krishna. So that is not favorable. So that is sense enjoyment. Or we're sleeping, and we know that our body works quite well with 5 hours or 6 hours or seven, whatever we require. If we need 8 hours a day rest, that is not maya. That is fully uttam bhakti. If when we wake up for 16 hours, we're favorably serving Krishna, then that 8 hours. But if we need seven and we take eight, then that's cheating. Then that's not uttam bhakti. That's cheating. I mean, so the snooze alarm has become very, very helpful for cheating. You know, they have this. We didn't grow up with snooze alarms in the early days, early generation. Mm-hmm. You know, the clock went off, and then you had to just jump up or get beat to death by the clock ringing. Now it rings. Oh, be quiet. Doom. You know, and then 10 minutes later, ding, and tong, and tong, 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 tong. And each time you hit it down, it's like you're already ready to get up. At the first time, because you know, and a lot of times you're already awake before it goes off. You're up. And, oh, I feel quite fresh. Oh, it's not time yet. Okay. Then ding, ding. Oh, okay, well, shut up then. So like this is cheating propensity. So it ultimately, everything can be uttam bhakti when we understand these principles. I'm doing this. My attitude. What is my attitude? Is my attitude one of enjoyment, or is this favorable? And this is for the pleasure of Krishna. I think we'll stop here. Any questions on this point of anukulyena, which is what we're describing today, anukulyena. Favorable attitude. Even there's so many places throughout the scriptures where this is often mentioned. If you read in 10th canto of Bhagavatam, it says, Bhava Grahi Janardhan. Famous, it's maybe 90th chapter. Bhava Grahi Janardhan. And we hear that in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writing, sometimes he uses the word bhava, saragrahi, right? Saragrahi, the essence of one's mood. So bhava grahi janardhan means that Krishna janardhan, Lord janardhan or Krishna, he accepts the bhava. What is the essence of your bhava? Because what do we want to attain? We want to attain bhava bhakti. So even our sadhana should be mixed with a lot of bhav. Whatever it's called bhava bhas. It's not pure bhav, obviously. That has to come down and enter our heart and mix up with our heart and transform our heart. That's when Sarup Shakti contacts our heart, and then we experience bhava. But even at the level of sadhana or raganuga sadhana, we have to try to mold our hearts around these conceptions so that our activities are actually performed with feelings, with sentiments, keeping Krishna in mind, keeping Krishna in the center of our mind and enthroned in our hearts. So this anukalyena concept is very important. So, is there any questions? Yeah, Sabi Sajjan.
Before that mood of anukul is before it appears in the heart of the practitioner, in the beginning he's supposed to be like acting out of duty because Guru Maharaj ordered him to do certain. Can it be also considered to be anukul or just?
Well, we may not be so conscious of, you know, Krishna in the beginning. But we certainly, because we've surrendered our lives, or attempting or trying to surrender our lives to Guruji, to Sri Guru, because it says here that this anukulya, this Krishna anushilanam or anukulyena, is also a favorable attitude towards Krishna and his devotees, his expansions. So, because favorable, because it said non-inimical, favorable means a loving attitude. So the disciple also should have some loving attitude towards his guru, because if he feels grateful, everything my guru has given, and so there's also a mood of love, even although we don't have that loving attitude for Krishna, because we can't really feel Krishna or contact Krishna or perceive Krishna very much in the beginning. But certainly we can perceive and see the guru and feel some favorable attitude, and moreover that's what generically is sometimes referred to as guru bhakti. You hear this term, or we used to hear it a lot in the early days. The Indians especially would remark how the Prabhupada's disciples had so much guru bhakti. They didn't know anything about manners or etiquette. Now we have all these courses on Vaishnava behavior and shloka memorization and sambandha and Srimad Bhagavatam, so many educational courses. So we know a lot. But then we didn't know anything, didn't know how to behave, but we had a lot of bhakti. And so people even remarked when the devotees came to India that Swami Bhaktivedanta's disciples, they don't know very much, but they're really attached to, they really have love for their guru, and they really want to do anything he says, and they're so enthusiastic and dedicated to pleasing him. They have such an attitude of service, and such an attitude. We must have heard this term throughout our whole lives in school. The teacher will say, yes, you're doing nice in the course, but your attitude is not good. You may have not a very good attitude about the teacher or about the school. You're just kind of going through the motions. So guru is our attitude. Because Prabhupada says in so many places that as much as we love the devotees, as much as we love and express love for the devotees, and especially our guru, that is as much as we love Krishna. If we don't have much love or appreciation for guru or devotees, that means we have that much or less love and appreciation for Krishna himself. Because Krishna is manifesting before us as the devotees, as the Vaishnavas, as guru. So this is the point. Anything else? So, Radhe Radhe.